listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician.
Podcast.
Welcome to episode number 81 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and being that this is a roundtable edition, I have Chris and
Hello.
Bolton joining us.
Do you guys hear something?
No.
Just wait, listen. You hear that?
Oh,
faintly. Yeah.
Just kind of faintly.
What is that?
Oh yeah, that's my theme song.
You like that now that I have my own theme song?
I do like that. How did you end up with your own theme song?
Well, CD Baby podcast listener, Mr. Billy, decided to compose one for me.
It's fantastic. Is that the first time someone's written a song about you?
No. If you don't, I mean...
First time someone's written a song about you that you would let your parents hear?
Okay. It's the first time that someone besides myself has written a song about me.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Billy, for sending in that contribution. We'll play the entire song at the end of the podcast, but...
And check out the monster guitar solos at the end.
Yes, monster guitar solos. And if anyone else is inspired to write a song concerning a topic relating to the show, we'd...
Specifically me?
Yeah, specifically Bolton. We'd be more than happy to play it. So, moving on. How have you guys been? It's been... This is our first roundtable since the...
Holidays, yeah, it's been good. I've been working on doing a pre-sale of my band's album, where I thought it would be clever of myself to offer like a few different packages for sale for friends and relatives who wanted to get the album ahead of time. And I put three price points, one at $10, one at $20, and one at $40. The $10, you get the album plus you get your name in the liner notes. The $10 one the $20 one is just called Album Plus Love, which means they love us, so they're going to pay extra for it. And then the $40 one, you get two CDs and a special gift. Oh. And we haven't decided what the special gift is yet, but we've actually probably two or three people bought the $40 one so far, and we've got a good spattering of the 10 and 20s. We've only got just a little over $200 so far, and our goal is going to be like 2,000. So we have to amp it up, ramp it up.
You have to make more friends and family.
I know.
That's right.
But I would encourage other artists to try it out. The nice thing is we're going to know when we get our CDs manufactured that, you know, X amount of CDs, you know, are already accounted for, mm-hmm. 50 CDs or 100 CDs or however many we can eke out of our friends and relatives. and CD Baby podcast listeners, if you're interested in Nervous and the Kid, nervousandthekid.com. That's my plug.
All right.
As for me, I just returned from one of the most fun musical and life experiences I've ever had.
Wow.
I was hired to play keyboards on this guy's album, and he, in his family, they have a beach house, so that apparently sleeps like 20-something people. Like, we all had, every musician, the engineer, we all had our own bedrooms. We felt like Led Zeppelin or something.
Wow.
But the engineer brought all of his studio, basically, to this guy's house and had to reset it up. And over 4 days on the coast, we arranged and performed his tunes. All live. Everything was tracked live. He'll probably go back and redo his vocals and acoustic guitar, but it was amazing how like collaborative, in the moment music making really is more powerful when it's done, I don't know, that way, the old way.
That's
for me.
That's great to hear, because I'm doing that in February with my band. We've got a beach house rented, and we're going out there with some friends and Pro Tools and tons of instruments to do that very thing. So
it was very cool. Like, basically, we started around noon and we'd record until about midnight. And each tune Took about 3 hours. We'd sort of spend time collaboratively arranging it and figure out when people were going to solo and where we should play and what instruments we should play. And then that usually took about 2 hours. And then the last hour we would spend just tracking and trying to get a good take of it. So cool. It was cool. Fun.
Well, I'm sure you'll have some more insights when we recap last week or whatever. The last episode, episode 80.
It's timely.
Timely, very timely. My band's album release is coming up, and actually Chris is playing the show with us. Your band is performing for the first time in 9 months, and mm-hmm. It's our album release show, so it should be fun.
Apparently I'm playing with you, too.
Yeah, I think you are. We're going to put you to work. So if you're in Portland and want to check that out, that's February 5th. You can catch both Chris and I in action, and we might try and get Bolton to actually show up to one of our shows.
I know, actually get out of the house.
So that's been keeping me busy with all sorts of promotion stuff, and we've been trying a lot of things, trying to figure things out as far as promoting a show effectively and having some success and plenty of failures, and so I'm sure I'll recap that at some point. So let's get into some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
It's still uncertain what the future of iTunes will be after Apple's purchase of Lala, but all signs still seem to be pointing to a web-based and cloud-based version of iTunes. Lala currently offers its users the ability to upload their entire catalog to the Lala servers or cloud, which gives the users the ability to listen to anything from their personal catalog from any device with a web connection. Now that Apple owns this technology, it seems to be the next step to get iTunes out of the proprietary iTunes software and onto the web. Rumors are flying that a web-based iTunes will arrive sooner than later, and one of the major benefits to artists would be iTunes search results that would finally populate a Google search. Are you wanting to get your music on Rock Band? A new program will enable bands to share their songs via the Rock Band video game without having to convince game developer Harmonix to make the tracks itself. Each completed song will go on sale in the Rock Band Network store, along with more than 700 in-house Rock Band tracks already available. These song programming tools have been available for a while, but an open beta testing period has begun. Creators and bands will have a chance to share their songs with a community of critics and fans. Once the library is big enough and the bugs have been exterminated, the content will go live on the average player's Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3 Rock Band Network store. Bands can team up with talented track makers working out of their basements, or the band members can do it themselves if they're savvy, then make a profit and gain exposure through the store, which will give them a 30% cut. Note that this is not a tool for just anyone who has a few minutes to kill and a song in mind. It's a full-featured professional editing suite, and according to Joystick, it will take a first-time user between 20 and 40 hours to complete a song. And those were the headlines I saw that I thought were intriguing.
Wow, I wonder what the 20 and 40 hours is. Is like that including tracking and stuff, or is that like figuring out how to use it?
I saw screenshots online. You got to go, you know, like all the little, because Rock Band has the full band.
Uh-huh.
It's not like Guitar Hero where it's just the guitar.
Right.
So I saw a screenshot where you have to go and place every, you know, note what the person's going to play. So, you know, when the thing's scrolling down telling you what notes to play, you got to tell them what, mm-hmm. At least that's what it looked like from the screenshot. It was pretty involved. And okay. So
you also have to load in all the tracks individually?
I think you have to make stem tracks.
Right.
So you have to have a drum, a bass, you know, all the guitars or, you know. So it's not something you just upload an MP3 and say go, you know,
right,
and it does
right.
It for you. That'll be interesting to see if it actually becomes something worthwhile for the indie artist. I know, you know, tons of people are interacting with music this way, but they take, let me read that again. It looked like it said they give the artist a 30% cut, not much. So yeah.
It's a lot of work to put out, like a week's worth of work to.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's probably very style-driven for a hard rock band or a guitar-based band. It's probably an interesting idea to try out. Outside of that, I don't know how successful you would be in getting, unless you have a huge fan base that might already be using rock band and might want to try it out. But
right.
But it was just interesting that they're finally opening that up to indie artists. By the time people are hearing this, it could be minutes away from when Apple has another big meeting scheduled at the end of January.
Right. The new tablet, they think, is coming out.
And some of the rumors are flying that they may announce the new iTunes. It's possible.
New cloud-based iTunes.
And also possible that a new iLife is being announced with a brand new GarageBand. So.
And I think maybe new iPhone software, too, I heard.
Yes.
It's a rumor.
But they're still linked up with AT&T? Or the rumors
apparently that's
too.
Possibly ending in June with the release of the new iPhone.
Mm. Wow.
So this would just be software coming in possibly in a few weeks.
And you know, it's not just because we're techie geeks. This stuff does have a lot of relevance for artists and musicians because the tablet could potentially be like a kind of revolutionary media device, things that are...
Well, and when they started the iTunes LP, a lot of people thought that it was specifically made to be a really good companion to the tablet, but mm-hmm. and people were assuming that the tablet would be announced, and this was back in the summer, and so that didn't happen, and so that's kind of where people see that Apple really taking this to be a more interactive media device, so it is definitely worthwhile to watch, and the iPhone's great for, you know, it's the perfect thing to have out at shows with you to take pictures. The new ones take video, and you know you can post things everywhere. And there are other phones that do it too, but Apple's been kind of the champion of making everything seamless across all platforms, which they do a good job with. So,
yeah.
Are really the ones driving that technology. If they really hadn't made a splash with the iPhone, who knows if other phones would have jumped in on the game. So,
yeah.
So it'll be interesting to watch. Going back to the Rock Band thing, if you're an artist that's used or had your song converted to a Rock Band song or are planning on doing it, I'd love to hear how it goes, if it was a pain in the butt, if it was worth the time, if fans seem to enjoy it. We'd like to hear that feedback. So.
Most definitely.
Well, let's skip into the recap of our last episode, my interview with Howard Massey. Super nice guy. I forgot to mention at the beginning of the podcast when I interviewed him that the phone line was a little rough. He lives out in the middle of very rural New York. Phone lines are probably original to whenever they originally laid phone lines. And that phone line, he said, was his better one. So there was a little bit of a hum going through there. But, it was a great interview. It was one of my favorite as far as some of the details he gave. What did you guys think? I know, Chris, you just had your recording experience, so it was very timely.
Yeah, I really connected with his... it seemed like his strongest opinion was that music should be collaborative, you know, above recording technology or anything else. But so I really agreed with that, especially after that weekend I had of working with a guy who had songs, but basically chords, melody, lyrics, not a whole lot of idea about groove, instrumentation, stuff like that, and letting the band have an opinion and letting the producer really shape where it went, I think led to a much, much better product than if he had just come in basically telling everyone what to do, you know?
Kind of to Howard's point and your experience, in Howard's book, Behind the Glass Volume 2, he has this panel of Nashville producers, and I referenced it in the interview, but one of them was kind of seemed kind of against that idea, not necessarily the collaborative effort, but the idea that the artist wasn't completely hands-on and dictating everything, that you know, if they're not passionate about what it should be, because he referenced, you know, being a mixing engineer at one point and an artist just kind of going, you know, here, you do what you want with it, and him well, thinking, well, they're not passionate about their music, and to me it was the opposite of, like, you know, my experience with like our EP we just did. It was, I wanted more collaboration. I wanted more people with talents outside of
right.
what we had to offer to give input and make it better.
Yeah, in the case of the project I just worked on, I mean, the artist, I think he intentionally tried to not have too many specific ideas so that he could get everyone, you know, that's why he called us to
right.
put our stamp on it. And in the end, if there were disagreements, he made the final call. So he wasn't like hands off. He just sort of, you know, let the ball roll. We would work with it.
And in one way, you almost, like, I could see myself doing that, handing off an album and being like, what are you going to do with this? You know, and then maybe have it going, being like, whoa, that's not what I was thinking, or whoa, that's cool. You know, mm-hmm. like I could see that being sort of almost a creative decision to, like, if you trust who you're handing your album off to, mm-hmm. you know, to be like, let's, okay, now it's your turn. Now we're playing that game, the corpse.
Oh, exquisite corpse.
Exquisite corpse. When you pass around the paper, you're like, okay, now it's in your hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that he talks about, and I think that I really walk the line on this, is he was saying that he worries, or that the sort of the DIY ethic has sort of hurt music in some ways, because artists are doing everything themselves and not going to producers and people who have more experience in certain areas. I don't know. I mean, I think I see both sides. I think some music is probably like really benefit the use of producers, but I think that there's also music that pops out because there's someone who just wants to, you know, doesn't have the resources, but has to be extremely creative in order to produce something. And I think we're seeing a lot of albums, especially indie albums, coming out like that, where people had like bare minimum resources, couldn't pay anybody, but it was just their heart, right. you know, that ended up producing an awesome album.
But I think his idea, and after, you know, talking with him and reading through some of his books, and what kind of popped into my head where I was like, I need to have him on the podcast, was that my fear would be that the art of real recording could die off. Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, you get to a point with technology where everybody can make something sound good, but they don't know how they got it to sound good.
Right.
Or because some computer did it.
Or they might not be able to make it sound great.
Yeah.
Everyone can make it sound good.
Good, yeah. And not sound great, but the idea that could be lost, that there is value in certain rooms that people use to record, and
yeah.
and certain techniques, and certain and just the idea that some people have just the amazing ability to hear better than others, people that have spent years honing a craft, because it's an art form. And, you know, and I think that's kind of like where the fine line is, taking an art form and just turning it into a fast food mm-hmm. type experience, as opposed to, like, you know, what you experienced over the weekend, going and actually collaborating and making a recording, as opposed to that's musical, as opposed to just making a piece of product.
The other big thing that struck me about the collaborative thing that he was mentioning, and sort of people having musical skill as opposed to just doing overdub after overdub until you get it right, and auto-tuning things, was when I was playing with these other musicians over the weekend, that were all like extremely competent to absolutely amazing. Just something happens live where you give each other space and you fill in when someone else, it is like this give and take, which I feel like when you're overdubbing and you know you can have, you know, unlimited tracks or whatever, you just get such a different quality out of the music. It feels like it breathes. It's more alive. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
no, it does.
And most of the music I've made in my life has been overdub driven. You know, I'll play a drum beat, then I'll go and put the bass part down.
Right.
And it was so refreshing and eye-opening to see what six people could do all in a room together. Mm-hmm. It was
cool. You guys all playing with headphones?
Yep.
And I think, you know, as people wonder what will happen to the music business in the future, and kind of separating out the recording industry, because, you know, that's sort of a separate thing, because whether or not people can package music and market it on a grand scale is kind of separate of whether or not people are going to have the resources to pay to record music. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go hand in hand, but they also, one can live without the other.
Everyone doesn't have $60,000 to spend on their next record?
No, they don't. But as things move forward, I think, and the MP3 generation kind of gets a little older, and, you know, devices can have bigger storage capacities, and people move to better file formats that preserve the audio quality better. I think there'll be some return to people like really getting that deep, rich sound in a recording that doesn't exist in an MP3, and some of those techniques will become really valuable again.
I've lived the past 2 years pretty much listening to music either in my car, which is an okay sound system, or on my computer, which is terrible. And two nights ago, I went and bought some CDs and took them home, and I really wanted to just have like that old-fashioned, like, put it in, listen on the big stereo, you know, make everything dim the lights, invest in this music. And I didn't have a single thing to play it on in my house. I was like, I need to get a good stereo again.
Yeah.
But it took me 2 years to reach that point, which is maybe sad.
Well, when Jeff Stuart Saltzman was mixing our EP, he was talking about the fact, he was lamenting the fact that people listening to music used to be a social experience. People used to get together and listen to music. And I don't know if I had mentioned this on the podcast before, but you know, now everyone listens in their cars or headphones at the gym.
To recorded music.
By themselves. But even just listening to recorded music used to be a social experience. People would get an album, invite their friends over and listen. I had the idea of doing like a monthly listening party where people would get together, each bring a couple tracks of something and you know, just sit and listen. Not talk, not socialize, but the idea is to sit and listen to the album. Maybe people explain why they wanted to play this one or whatever. And I think I still plan on doing it at some point, but that thing came up as well. I was like, well, what do we play it on? I've got a little Bose thing that an iPod sticks into, which sounds great, but at the same time, it's like, I don't even have a CD player stereo at home.
I think you may have mentioned it on the podcast before, because I remember having the thought of that scene from I Love You Man, where he's really excited to play Rush's Tom Sawyer song for his girlfriend. And she's like, okay, cool, let's listen. And he presses play and he's expecting it to be like this giant sound and it's coming out of this teeny speaker. And she's like, all right, cool. Yeah, I guess that's rocking. I don't know.
Anyway, we digress. One thing he highlighted that I think was a good point that people were talking about in the comments section for the episode was the idea of just having one good signal chain.
And, all right.
If I ever get some cash, I think I'm going to shoot for that. Just getting, you know, a good mic and a good preamp and not worrying about other things. Because if you have a good mic and a good preamp, you can do a lot of really cool stuff, whether acoustic guitars, regular guitars, even some drums. And I haven't come across it in volume 2 of his book, but in volume 1 of his book, I was shocked at how many of the producers said that they end up using a Shure 57 as a go-to mic on so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always good to have one of those.
Workhorse.
Yep, it's a workhorse. It's cheap, indestructible. You can back over it with your car. It'll still work just fine.
That's what I'm talking into right now.
That's right. That's right. So unless you guys have any more comments, we have some comments from the
Peanut
website
Gallery.
I was going to share. Yes. Our first Robert Lee King comment in 2010.
Awesome. I cannot wait.
Drum roll,
it was
please.
Really long. It was really long. You'll have to go to the site and read it, but here's one of the things he said that I thought was interesting. The one thing that struck me was that Howard is still very focused on the signed artist side of things. Much of your conversation, even though indie perspective was the subject, kept coming around to when the artist is of a level to be of interest to a producer and consequently a label. And he still thinks the $60,000 price tag for an album is ridiculous. But I think, you know, going to my conversation with him, I don't think the signed artist is who's looking for a producer. Let me rephrase that. I don't think that a lot of artists that need producers are necessarily signed. There's plenty of indie artists that are looking for a producer. And partly why I kind of went down that road with him is knowing that a lot of producers, like he said, if they believe in somebody's talent, will a lot of times do the work for free. And it takes time and building relationship and getting them to believe in what you're doing. But, you know, if there's some good producers in your town, it's worthwhile to, you know, take time to get to know them, send them the music you're working on. Even if you're not ready to record, they can give you some feedback. And if you don't have the cash, but they really like what you're doing, they mm-hmm. might be willing to give you some work for free. So
I just thought of, I mean, producer sounds like this sort of fancy title that you have to go through all this work to achieve. But I mean, I've produced people's albums before. Essentially, all you're doing is, as an artist, you're asking someone else's that you trust for their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not filling the role of sequencing things, or like I'm not the mediator between them and a label, but I'm there guiding their thoughts and opinions, I guess, about music.
Yeah.
So anyone could be a producer.
Yeah, and the other thing to remember about the producer role is most producers, there are some, aren't necessarily tied to any sort of label situation. There are some that have contracts to do so many albums per year with a label, but a lot of them, they're just like freelance artists, mm-hmm. you know? The good ones can get really good jobs, but if they want to work consistently, they're going to have to pick up other jobs. So they'll have like, you know, the producer we worked with had like, you know, three or four kind of cornerstone jobs a year where it was like an album where he's going to spend a month or two just solely focused on that. But then there'd be gaps of 2 weeks here, 3 weeks there that he'd have to fill in. And you're not going to get a lot of money from a big name artist for 2 weeks, you know. So a lot of times they would just, you know, get somebody in really cheap just to keep things working and keep some sort of money in, because some money is better than having all that gear and time and space sitting empty. So yeah. So it's good to know those things that about the producer's role. And $60,000, it is a lot for an indie album, but if you want to get a great room and good gear and people that have years of experience on how to use it, it'll go fast.
Make sure before you spend that $60,000 that you can make that $60,000
back. They're not spending $60,000.
Credit card's not the way to go with $60,000 recording budget.
Please don't.
Make sure you've made at least $30,000 on your last album.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, one of the things to why I think it's worth spending some money to get into a good studio is because access to gear that you're not going to get from a plug-in from your computer. But then Neil, who posted on the comment section, said, I really like his point about having one great signal chain, a great mic, great preamp, and I think it was sort of implicit in the conversation, a great analog digital converter if you're using digital. So if you would like to weigh in on the episode, leave a comment on the comment section. You can do so at cdbabypodcast.com. Just click the comment link under the episode, or you can give us a call. And let's get to some calls right now.
CD Baby Podcast.
Message line
206-426-5683.
The number you have dialed
206-426-5683.
Hey, what's up? This is Aaron Gibson. You can find me at www.aarongibson.me. I just finished listening up to some of the episodes on collaborations, and I admire you guys for being able to do what you do. I'm a bass player, singer, songwriter, and I was just going to say that sometimes, though, the more than half of the vibe of a record can come from sitting in the room with the person. I just finished tracking with a drummer in a studio in Vancouver, and I'm on my way out to Salt Lake City now, and some catching up on the CD Baby episodes, and just thought I'd throw in my two cents that I just think it makes a huge difference on the vibe of something to actually be in that room with the person. I admire the people who have the vision to be able to pull it off without that. So take care.
Hey guys, it's Andy Eppler. That's Eppler. I was just listening to episode 80, and you guys were talking about I can't remember the guy's name, but a mutual acquaintance of you guys who was recording in this strange way with, you know, putting the mics around the room and then mixing them together later. I thought it would be really interesting if you guys did an episode about how the average artist is recording. Because I've talked to a lot of other independent people, and they seem to be all using different equipment and all different kinds of things. Some people have got the fancy computers and they've got $1,000 microphones. Other people are using Shure 57s and a Mac, you know. I think that would be just a fascinating episode. So anyways, thanks.
Thank you for those calls. Chris, the first caller, would really agree with your experience over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying music can't be made the other way. Plenty of music sounds great that's made the other way. I just had an experience.
Chris, why do you hate technology so much?
It allows us all to be dumber and worse musicians.
That's true.
And in answer to Andy Epler's call, did you record on a Mac with some SM57s?
Over the weekend?
Yeah.
Well, it all eventually went into a
Mac.
Or
did you have some $1,000 microphones?
Yeah, there were fancy mics. I saw some pictures on Facebook.
There were quite a few $1,000 microphones and preamps and compressors, and but it all eventually went into a Mac.
And I still have the option open of trying to, you know, follow along somebody in the recording process. It's just very time consuming to do and a lot of scheduling. I've said before, Bolton and I tried to do this way back in the early days of the podcast, and it ended poorly, not only with how the process went, but my hard drive with all the information got stolen, so it never happened. But we had kind of learned some stuff while doing that, and we're going to try it again, but it just takes a lot of time and the right band, and it would have to be someone here in Portland. So if someone in Portland wants to get on the podcast with us recording your...
And I'll be bringing my stories of our recording or our successes and failures. We're flying by the seat of our pants, so we'll see what happens.
What you guys doing digital?
We're doing digital. We're like, basically we invited this one guy to come out and record us, and he's like, well, I don't have the equipment. My friend's got the equipment. And he's like, can he come? And can my girlfriend come too? So like the three of them.
You can start a cult.
So we have three engineers in quotes, recording us, and they got a Digio 2, which is the one with like the 8 inputs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I guess we're going to probably get some mic preamps, and I don't know where we're going to get our mics. We're just going to borrow everything. So. Well, interesting. We'll see what happens.
Well, let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
And in Andy Epler's call, he was talking about, in the interview, we were talking about how Daniel Lenoir has been doing some stuff. He said a mutual friend of ours, we're not friends, but we are friends on Facebook.
You're not enemies, though.
We're friends on Facebook now. So Daniel Lenoir has seen my name, or his assistant has seen my name. But I thought that was an interesting technique because we use, you know, to record this podcast, little Zoom H4 recorder, and it has two condenser mics on top to get a stereo thing, to pick up the stereo field. We don't use that for the round table as far as like those mics. But I use them at rehearsals all the time to record what we're doing, and they do sound really amazing in the room. And so what he was talking about was taking a couple of just these, you know, portable recorders and just placing them around the room and recording and then putting all the tracks together and kind of getting a really cool room vibe. I think it's a good idea. It's worth a shot, especially if you're like a jazz band. I could see you making a whole record that sounds amazing that way.
You know, just mixing in a little of the room ambience from different places.
I mean, if you've got, because a lot of jazz players have top-notch, you know, instruments. And so if you've got great sounding gear and you can just play some around the room and do a little trial and error and can play well together, you could come up with some a whole album that way.
So you're talking about syncing different digital recorders together, though. Yeah. Wouldn't that be a little bit hard?
Nah.
Yeah. I guess it's all ones and zeros.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you'd have to take a little tweaking, moving it around. You'd probably want some sort of like, I don't know, like they do in movies. Like
where
some
you clap.
Yeah. All right. I know that we've had issues syncing digital recorders in the past with your recorder, Bolton, that was a different brand, and mine, they weren't, the timelines were kept getting off. Like, how that happens, I don't know, but it didn't work. But yeah, I would try it with some recorders that are all the same brand, but I might try that just for some fun, something to do.
I've got one of those Zoom H2s, and it actually records in surround sound, so I don't know who mixes in surround sound, but... some of our listeners probably. If you want a handheld recorder that records
maybe
in surround
sound.
Maybe
you could get a theme song in surround sound.
I know.
Mr. Billy, can you remix it, please?
That's right. Well, if you'd like to call in our listener line, the number is 206-426-5683. We always love getting your calls. And feel free to weigh in on anything covered in the podcast, anything you're doing outside of... the podcast, which that made no sense.
Hopefully it's music related.
Music related, yes. Success stories, mistakes.
What you had for lunch.
Yeah.
Tweet
That's
us
what
about
Twitter's
that.
For. Yeah. So yeah, give us a call. You can also email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. We get a few emails, mainly from people in Nigeria wanting me to put money in my account, but feel free to contact us that way as well.
And I guess we'll be wrapping this up with Mr. Billy's new number one hit.
The bolts.
All right, and we'll catch you next time.
Peace.
There's nothing.